The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Dr. Philip Koppler, co-author of Marketing 4.0, Moving from Traditional to Digital. And you are listening to the 100th episode of the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the 100th episode of the Marketing Book Podcast, which was named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. My goal for this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's actually working in modern marketing. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything discussed in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. Also, if you're listening to the show right now and you're not driving or operating dangerous machinery, please send me a tweet and tell me where in the world you're listening from. My Twitter handle is @marketingbook. For this 100th episode, we're joined by Dr. Philip Koppler, and we're going to talk about the new book that he has co-authored with Hermawan Kartajaya and Iwan Setiawan, entitled Marketing 4.0, Moving from Traditional to Digital. Dr. Philip Koppler is the S.C. Johnson & Son Distinguished Professor of International Marketing at the Kellogg School of Management, Northwestern University, where he's been on the faculty since 1962. He's also the author of over 55 marketing books, including Marketing Management, which is now in its 14th edition, Principles of Marketing, Koppler on Marketing, How to Create, Win, and Dominate Markets, and Marketing 3.0, From Products to Customers to the Human Spirit. Dr. Koppler has incredible and international presence. His books have been translated into approximately 25 languages, and he regularly speaks on the international circuit. In 2005, the Financial Times surveyed 1,000 executives in 25 countries about the most influential business writers and management gurus, and Dr. Koppler ranked fourth after Peter Drucker, Bill Gates, and Jack Welch. He is ranked by the Wall Street Journal as one of the top six most influential business thinkers, and he is widely regarded as the father of modern marketing. Dr. Koppler, congratulations on Marketing 4.0, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Douglas, you just stated those things well, and I appreciate the introduction you're giving to me.
Well, and you, going back to, it's an honor to have you. And going back to your international presence, you were recently in Japan with a very recent guest on the Marketing Book Podcast, Professor Malcolm McDonald.
Yes, Malcolm, I know, has done a podcast for you, and he's a dear, dear friend in England. And he is probably the best authority on B2B, business-to-business marketing, particularly on planning, marketing planning. Yes, mm-hmm. I saw him in Japan.
And we talked about his second edition of his book, Malcolm McDonald on Marketing Planning. So I just have to tell my Dr. Koppler story. I one of the many reasons I'm so excited to have you on this show. In the 1980s, 90s, I was working at J. Walter Thompson, the big ad agency in New York. And when I was working there, I went down to the NYU bookstore and I bought your textbook, Marketing Management. And that one was the seventh edition. And I'm holding it in my hands right now. And it's in the 14th issue edition now. And a friend of mine at work there was going to leave and go off and get a MBA at Northwestern. And I remember telling him, you know, oh, Dr. Koppler might be one of your professors. And I was going to give him my book in hopes that he could get you to autograph it. But my concern is that I wasn't going to get it back. And I still have the price tag on it. It was $60 in the early 90s, worth every penny, of course. But anyway, your work has touched so many lives of marketers and business folks.
Yeah, let me tell you a related story. I've had a CEO come up to me when I was abroad, and he said, here's the book I look at almost every day. And I looked at the book. It was my first edition of Marketing Management, published in 1967. So I said to him, you say that you use it? Tell me, did you like the chapter on the internet? He says, I know. How do you measure brand equity, I ask him. And he says, I didn't remember seeing that in the book either. So I said, you know, frankly, that isn't today's marketing. You read about 1967 marketing, and therefore, I think you need a new book. And it's not that I need your money, but I've already published the 15th edition. And by the way, Douglas, it's the 15th edition that
latest.
And he said, good, I'll buy it because I really better get on top of it.
Okay, well, I guess...
So I did, but I signed the book anyways because having made the lesson clear and he understood it, I signed his book.
That's great. That's great. Well, I got it off of Wikipedia, so it just goes to show that it's not always accurate. So let me start with a quote from the book, and we'll get into a few questions about it. It goes as follows. Marketing 4.0 is a marketing approach that combines online and offline interaction between companies and customers. In the digital economy, digital interaction alone is not sufficient. In fact, in an increasingly online world, offline touch represents a strong differentiation. Marketing 4.0 also blends style with substance. While it is imperative for brands to be more flexible and adaptive due to rapid technological trends, their authentic characters are more important than ever. In an increasingly transparent world, authenticity is the most valuable asset. So, Dr. Kotler, can you explain for the listener the book Marketing 3.0 and how it came to this updated version?
In the year 2010, we published the book Marketing 3.0. By we, I mean the other two authors who then, 6 years later, the three of us decided that the changes in marketing were so substantial because of the internet that we had to update 3.0 to 4.0. But it's important to understand what 3.0 did and what 1.0 is. 1.0 is the old-fashioned marketing where you basically make a product and you have salesmen who are going to try to sell it. And you try to sell it on the basis of its performance capabilities. So you price for performance and people might say, yeah, that's a good value for the money. But we were leaving out emotions. So we went to 2.0, which is about the heart, not just the mind, and said that companies would be smarter to also understand that people buy products for many different reasons. And if we can do a high touch besides a high tech, then it would help. And that went over well. And so 3.0 raised us to even a higher level, namely that all the efforts at marketing have a big impact on the environment in which we live and the society and so on. And there should be some measure of compassion in serving customers. You know, for example, you can keep selling them bad food to eat because it's tasty and the wrong things to drink because, again, it's tasty, but you might want to ask about the whole person, and the most authentic relationship you can have is to really be serving value to the person, not just in his terms, but reminding him possibly of what is real value to his health and his livelihood. So that left the 3.0 well off because we had a great following for that message. However, since the last 6 years, we've seen that we are increasingly moving into online marketing, but we shouldn't forget offline marketing. There is a tendency for people to predict that everything will be online in the future, and we think that would be a mistake. The fact is that we have to reach the customer in a number of ways and blend both offline and online. And I'll make this point that Procter & Gamble, I noticed, was up to about 35% digital marketing which means that they were 65% still broadcast and print marketing. I even believe that will go further, maybe 50%. But I don't think we're going to go to 100% digital marketing. And therefore, we have to explain to people who want to know the new marketing through that book we wrote, how do you incorporate the digital side and blend it with the traditional side?
You talk in the book about why connectivity is the most important game changer in the history of marketing. Can you explain this concept of connectivity and why it's had such a big impact?
Yes. We didn't, as consumers, know much about corporations except for what they told us about themselves, which was usually the 30-second commercial. And so we would say if the company wanted us to feel warm toward them and trusting of them, it would be their job to just keep reaching us with their print ads and their 30-second commercials. But today, we can learn a great deal about a company without them saying anything about themselves, although they will continue to say things about themselves.
Yes.
We can ask our friends about a certain car experience they had, or what they got out of a certain refrigerator or washing machine appliance. We can read ratings of all of these things, and therefore we can connect with so many more points of information, our friends, acquaintances, rating systems, and so on. And not only just to get to know more about a particular product and company, we can reach anywhere in the world now in a way that was not possible before. Do you remember, Doug, the days when how much it would cost us to make a phone call?
Yes.
Even to England. And nowadays, we never think of money as stopping us from connecting with distant friends and even calling companies and so on and so forth. So that's the connectivity is something that Facebook was the one to first push. Their idea is that everyone, it's in principle, you can connect to everyone in the world.
Yeah, and so because of that connectivity and the digital nature of all this, and I guess people think that it's just going increasingly that way. The long march continues. In the book, you explain that high touch interaction is becoming the new differentiation for marketers.
Yes, we believe that we live in basically big cities. Big cities are very different than living in small towns or villages. One of the differences, it's a very alienating experience. We see masses of other people, and we don't know anything about them. And it's very different in a small town. And so we have to navigate ourselves carefully in where we live and finding out what is available to us. And nowadays, with the email and other means, we are visited by many messages. Many messages come from sponsors of all kinds, trying to sell us all kinds of things. And so we're in a world of brands. We live in a world of brands. Now, you raised the question about experience and so on. There's a big statement that in the past, we were just focused on the product, and later we got very interested in services. And those are things that have become quite pedestrian. I mean, everyone can find a can of Coke when they want it, and they can get the service, banks. They go into a bank, you get the bank service. But the real question is there any... We're missing, as urban consumers, high touch. We're missing the satisfaction of real relationships and caring other people who care. And so we have been advising companies to make more of the delivery of an experience as part of what they're doing. This is especially pertinent to retailing. In other words, if I face clerks who are indifferent to our presence or eat in a restaurant where everything is mechanically done, even the smile is mechanical, I don't feel very close to that organization. So we're trying to say that there's a hunger for real intimacy and experience, and some companies have learned how to do it. You know, there is a company that that sells fishing rods and so on, and I'm trying to remember its name. And in the retail shop, you actually go fishing. I mean, that's simulating. That's more than simulating the experience.
That sounds like something I might see at Bass Pro Shop.
That may be it. Yeah, that may be Bass.
I've seen a lot of fish when I've been there. I didn't know that people were actually fishing in it, but that's true. You know, talking about the human touch, let me just read one other excerpt from the book that really, really got my attention. You say, brands should become less intimidating. They should become authentic and honest, admit their flaws, and stop trying to seem perfect. Driven by core values, human-centric brands treat customers as friends, becoming an integral part of their lifestyle. And you go on to say that, you know, in Chapter 8, that marketers should try to create brands that behave more like humans, approachable and likable, but also vulnerable. Can you explain more about why that's becoming so important?
Well, in the old days, we said a brand's going to be put across as a perfect solution to a well-understood need that some customer has. And of course, by claiming that, we're going to end up disappointing consumers. We're selling them a fantasy that's not a reality. And we're caught sometimes. I guess this would happen if we say that this car will make you so attractive to the opposite sex that you ought to buy it, you know.
Let me know which car that is, please.
Okay. Yes, I've been asked that question before and haven't answered it before either. But the point is that we overpromise, we exaggerate, and we feel if we got it sold, we shouldn't worry about whether they were pleased. Well, that's a mistake, because they're going to, nowadays in the hyper interconnected world, they're going to be more important as a source of a attitude toward the product and than any 30-second commercial. We know that, by the way. So
yeah, I think you touched on that, where the what the companies say is generally trusted less than what others say.
And do you know, we have a system called the Net Promotion Score, where we ask not only is this consumer someone who bought the product a few times, but is that someone who has become so attracted to that product that we offer, that brand, that they are an advocate? And if we have no advocates, we're not going to go very far. If we have at least some of the people who buy our goods and services ready to either answer questions of how good is that product, or in fact, they go and knock on doors of friends and say, I am so excited about this new Volvo that came out as a car. If we have some of those people, they will play a very important role, much more important than the role played by any ads by the company.
You mentioned that there was one part in the book where you said, how should marketers improve brand awareness without increasing the marketing budget significantly, which I'm sure will get everyone's attention. And the answer is customer conversations, like you just described.
Right. Especially with customers who are very satisfied and acting like advocates.
Right.
Actually, there has been a system of creating buzz that some companies have used, where people are actually hired to see a product, and if they like it, to agree to buzz about it. That's pushing the limit. That's sort of inauthentic, but it should happen anyways by developing products that are highly, highly satisfying.
So there's two concepts, Dr. Kotler, in the book that I really want the listener to hear about, and one of them is what you call the five A's. And for reference, there's AIDA, and we're not talking about the famous opera, but it's AIDA, like Alec Baldwin talked about in Glengarry Glen Ross, Awareness, Interest, Desire, and Action. And you explain in the book that we're now going into this new era where the five A's work better, which are aware, appeal, ask, act, and advocate. Can you explain why that new paradigm is necessary?
Much of that has to do with the concept of the customer journey. And every customer who ends up with a product has gone through some journey. And it's not the same journey. People end up buying, let's say, a Maserati for different reasons and with different journeys. One guy may walk right into the dealership and say, I want to buy that car. And another may stew over it and think about it and ask friends and go. So different journeys may be normal in any type of category or purchase category. And we wanted to develop a set of steps involved in the journey and that would be even more informative, especially because they could serve as metrics. For example, we have a five-step thing. So we might even ask, what's the relationship between stimulating appeal and that ending up as advocacy, or stimulating appeal and getting an act to occur? If you look closely at the book, you'll see that we are almost now have a system of measuring the rate of return on marketing investment. By putting together some of the actual numbers in the five steps that were used for a journey, we might be able to firm up a measure of how much we got back as a company from that particular journey. So it gets more technical, but we think that these steps, and by the way, there could be even more A's if you want to get down to it, and even if we can't create an A for them, but we've had some good reception to the 5A redefinition that we've offered to replace AIDA.
Well, we can't go too much further into it in this interview because it becomes much more visual, and you then overlay it with how it works with different industries, and it's really fascinating about how you can identify gaps in the different parts of these funnels and the different shapes of the funnels. Really fascinating. Dr. Kotler, in the entire chapter on content and content marketing, which I absolutely loved, and you explain that content is the new ad and hashtag is the new tagline. Can you explain that?
Yes. Here's the thing. If you are a company and you are trying to build a strong relationship with customers, you could do that by constantly trying to sell them. That is, putting your 30-second commercial in front of them and so on. And that's getting not only expensive, but it gets trite after a while. And if you want to really warm up a relationship, you should know enough about the customer to know what he or she is interested in. And suppose you see an article that, let's say the customer is a fan of baseball, and there's a terrific article you read about how baseball works, and you send it to him. That's content. It gets to the idea that you're supplying some interesting things to a customer and may be remembered for that thoughtfulness on your part. So you can't just take to content casually. If you really want to know each of your customers, and by the way, the salespeople are usually the best in knowing the content of each that each customer would value.
Amen.
And yet, the salesman may want us to generate some content, all kinds of articles and things that probably are of interest to more than one customer. Maybe we're selling steel or something, and there's some new things happening in the steel world that would be of interest. Now, you notice one of the problems will be it's going to be very hard to know, did they even read the content? Did they end up with the feeling, hey, I'm so glad the company told me about this? The hardest thing will be to measure the rate of return on marketing investment in content. But it's becoming very popular for companies, large companies, to put together some people who are responsible for searching for content that will interest the customers of that particular company, and not send all at one time. Actually, we start talking about context as well as content. Context says that content will have the right impact if it comes at the right time to the right person, at the right cost to reading it, and so on and so forth. So content and context are becoming useful concepts in trying to warm up a relationship with our customers.
Related to the content, there were four words that were in the book, and I kept seeing them, or I may have seen them maybe just a few times, but they really resonated with me. And it was this idea of creating content that address, quote, latent anxieties and desires. It kept coming back to latent anxieties and desires. And I'm going to be using that quite a bit going forward to try to explain, try to help clients and companies understand that, is this content you're creating, does it at all get to the latent anxieties and desires of your prospective customers, or are you talking about yourself?
The act of buying anything is really complex. And as a matter of fact, sometimes when you ask a customer why he purchased something, he's only giving us a very surface explanation. We know that because when we do neuroscience and put earphones or their equivalent on the head of a customer, and then we show the customer a picture of a product or a picture of a presenter who is presenting a message, let's say a very pretty woman is presenting, or someone else, there's a lot of blips going on when we trace the signals we're getting. So we end up finding out what things really matter, and it was all at the unconscious level. So unconsciously, once you recognize Freud and other writers, there's a lot of anxieties that people have. There are a lot of hidden desires. They may not operate consciously, but they are there. They're latent. The word latent means not very visible, but somewhere down in our systems. So if you're really a creative marketer, you're going to not just think that a person is buying a computer with a sure-mindedness about what brand and so on, but rather with some anxieties that accompany the purchase. Should I be buying one? Is it the best one to buy? Can I really afford it? And so a marketer should be sensitive to more than just presenting a product to someone, but having designed the whole buying experience to give comfort and meet latent desires and possibly latent anxieties.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Kotler, at the very end of the book, talk about the wow factor, and that's what I want to ask you to talk about. And you say, in the marketing 4.0 world, where great products and great service are commodities, the wow factor is what differentiates a brand from its competitors. Can you explain this wow factor?
Well, we know it when we see it. But I was just back from Sweden, Stockholm, where I had a big debate with a Swedish icon. He's sort of their Elon Musk. His name is Koenigsegg, and he built the world's fastest car. And I knew about him, but I met him, and his car was right there, and I said, wow, as the door opened, not the way a normal door opens in a car, but it just sort of goes up rather than out, and so on. So, you know,
I don't have that car.
No. You know why you don't have it? Because you don't have $3 million. That car is not only selling at $3 million, but he's booked a business ahead for the next 4 years, and you pay your $3 million now. And the car's customized for you, and the normal buyer is really a car collector rather than a car driver. because in holding it for another couple of years, it will be worth $4 or $5 million. But the interesting thing is, you asked.
But you weren't there to buy the car.
No,
right?
Actually, he gave me a car. It was a small little model of the car.
Oh, okay.
That was very thoughtful of him. He gave me the model. But the main thing is that you can now. You're not going to feel a wow with a new toothpaste, possibly, unless suddenly it cleans your teeth. You know, they all claim cleaning your teeth white never seems to work. And if so, if one comes along and I try it, wow, I've got the cleanest teeth in overnight. So wows can happen because you built into the product or service something that is not supplied by the average supplier and maybe even quite proprietary and not easy to copy. So we should aim high. We should not only aim for a product that satisfies the customer, we should think of a way to where the whole delivery system and experience is something that turns him on so much that wow is transferred to all of his friends and anyone else who cares to listen to his experience.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about, it's explained in more detail, you talk about from the customer's point of view, three levels exist, which are enjoyment, experience, and engagement. So it's interesting to put that lens on and then go off into the world and look at how companies are doing as it relates to those three things and creating wow. And you have examples of companies that are engineering this very well.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Kotler, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
I would hope that the reader, and especially if this is these are executives of companies that want to not only succeed but wow their customers, that they basically aim high and start bringing in the digital age and all the connectivity that it offers them to be able to reach so many of their potential customers, and that they also deliver their product and service with a special touch, a high touch, not found in their competitors, so that in effect they, as customers, now are the best advertisers of the product that they just bought.
Mm-hmm. What books have inspired your work and career?
Well, my best book, really, or books, are books written by Peter Drucker. What an amazing person, the father of modern management, and I'd even call him the grandfather of modern marketing. Because there are a number of insights that he had about marketing way before, and he was never thought of as a marketer, but I would give him that credit. But Drucker basically touched on so many topics about how to run companies successfully that was my main inspiration. I also enjoyed very much some of the early articles by Ted Levitt from Harvard, the professor there, that opened up a lot of areas of interest to me.
I think about the time you joined the faculty at Northwestern, he might have written the one Marketing Myopia.
Yeah, that was his best article, although many others were very good. He said that basically you don't buy a drill, you make a hole.
Right.
And by the way, we have a new thought in that area by Clayton Christensen at Harvard. And he says he views a product as something that is able to do a job. So you buy a milkshake on your way to work so that you don't buy a donut because the donut is going to spill all over your suit as you drive. But if you have a milkshake, it can do the job better of giving you something to do and drink while you're driving. So he wants for every product put out by a manufacturer to really define carefully what job does that product really succeed in doing. Now, we always talk about it, but we never put it as a job. But he wrote a whole recent book on the jobs that different products do.
Oh, interesting. We'll have to include a link to that in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com.
Good.
Are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or are looking forward to reading?
Well, you know, recently I turned my interest into how marketing is affected by what's happening in our economy and in our democracy. People wondered why I ended up writing a book called Confronting Capitalism, followed by, in 2015, followed by a book called Democracy in Decline. And a lot of it has to do with the growing inequality of income, which I think is a cancer in the capitalist system that needs, that doesn't have to, we don't need to change capitalism. We need to make sure that there's enough money coming out of industry, going into the pockets of the workers, and not all of it or a great deal of it going into fewer and fewer pockets. And actually, my thesis there is that suicide may be committed by the rich if they continue to fail to give enough money to the working class. So basically what I'm saying is, do we want a society where there's many, many mansions being built and many private swimming pools, or one where there's a lot of low-cost housing being built and public swimming pools? Just to put the edge on the question of making sure that everyone is benefiting from capitalism and not just a few.
And we'll make sure to include links to those books as well. Very interesting. Dr. Kotler, how best can listeners learn more about you and your book?
Well, there's a sketch in Wikipedia about me, and I think if the listeners would go to Northwestern University's faculty list, they'll see a list of the books I've written and some of the my thoughts I have as a author and researcher.
And we'll make sure to include links to those as well. The name of the book is Marketing 4.0, Moving from Traditional to Digital. The authors are Philip Kotler, Hermawan Kartajaya, and Iwan Setiawan. Dr. Kotler, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you, Douglas, for inviting me at the 100th anniversary.
And that closes the book on the 100th episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. This will be the last episode. Just kidding. There are hundreds more to go. So please don't let the end of this episode be the end of what you can learn about modern marketing. Visit marketingbookpodcast.com for links to all the things we talked about in this interview and free marketing guides from my agency. And while there, make sure to sign up for the Marketing Book Podcast newsletter so you never miss an episode. I get the biggest kick out of learning who's listening to this podcast, so please introduce yourself. Here's how to get in touch. Connect with me on LinkedIn. My name again is Douglas Burdett, or send me a tweet at MarketingBook. And please join us next time as we welcome back to the show Scott Stratton, and we'll talk about the brand new second edition of his bestseller, Unmarketing. Everything has changed and nothing is different. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.